Good morning, everybody. It is November 30th. Wow, we are moving through the year 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. Welcome to your home away from homeroom. Certainly, it's my home away from homeroom. We have on the slate for you today Ghostbusters. Going to talk about the Ghostbusters movie, also going to go through a bunch of news, quite a bit of news, including stuff from the first doctor or one of the first doctors to observe Omicron symptoms in South Africa, and of course the new CEO of Twitter. Some important news items, but let's talk about Ghostbusters here first. This is a fun movie. Went to it with the kids over the weekend, and sometimes I think we forget that art is a very social endeavor. Art is about people. Art would be meaningless without people, right? Even the word art, artificial, requires some sort of agent, some sort of actor. So seeing the movie with people, with your kids, just adds to the enjoyment. And this is an absolutely fun movie. This review will contain spoilers, so for those of you that like to remain in ignorance or suspense, I guess we'll talk about ignorance and suspense in their relationship, I guess, in a second. But yeah, if you prefer ignorance, then you might not want to listen here. We'll skip through, and in about 20 minutes in, we will get to the, well, between 15 and 20 minutes in, we will get to the rest of the news here. So, what is so wonderful about Ghostbusters? Well, don't take it from me. The audience score is Rotten Tomatoes is 95% positive. That is a pretty high percentage. It's just a fun movie. It's delicious. 63% of the critics agree. They gave it a fresh score, and that's just what you want to see. Right? Because a lot of the critics out there, they will only give a good score to a movie these days if it is a social justice fighting movie. If it's not out there accusing certain groups of usually racially identified groups or gender-based groups, if it's not attacking certain groups and defending other groups or on one crusade or another, a lot of critics just will not give it a high score. So hey, that's great. That's exactly what you want to see. A decent but not overwhelming majority of critics enjoying it, and a high audience score. That's perfect. That's a sign of a very good movie these days. And indeed, Ghostbusters holds up. So what is so fun about it? Got five things here. Top five. Number one, it's Ghostbusters. It's what you wanted. If you remember the original with fond memories and you cherish going in the mid-1980s to see Slimer and see the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man assaulting Manhattan, this is the movie you've been waiting for, right? Now, Degrassi started the same people, same roles years later, plus their kids thing. This is a new development. It's underrated. Kit Hood, right, who developed Degrassi, she is third only to Stan Lee and Gary Gygax, and the most underrated 20th century literary figures, because Kit started this. Kit pioneered this idea of having your original cast continuing in your same fictional world and then adding in their kids. Degrassi gets so little credit compared to what it deserves. Remember, Degrassi is the reason we have 90210, Beverly Hills 90210. It was a copy of Degrassi. They even brought down Joey Jeremiah, Pat Mastriani, the actor, to audition for the role that became Brandon Walsh and Jason Priestley. So this is executing the Degrassi formula perfectly here. Ghostbusters, the exact right mix of the old and the new. Well, maybe we could have had a little bit more of the old, but especially because they released all that information ahead of time saying, oh, Bill Murray's in the movie, Annie Potts is in the movie, everybody's back. Sigourney Weaver, and that's a little bit of a tease. They really aren't in it too much, but they are in it enough, just enough, but they are in it enough, and they're very effective. So it's Ghostbusters, you know, so many Easter eggs, so many callbacks, They got proton packs. Marshmallow Men are here. Gozer the Gozerian is here. The Ghostmobile zooming through the small town instead of Manhattan, which is an interesting contrast, right? You got scary ghosts. You got not too scary ghosts. You have Vins Clortho and Zool, the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper, Selenium and Ivo Shandor. Great, great, great Ivo Shandor character there, getting more screen time. For those of you that played the video game, of course, Evo had a great role. Ivo Shandor had a big role in the video game. And he is in this movie, maybe not quite front and center, but he is lurking on stage like Chekhov's gun here. So it is the Ghostbusters world, and they nailed it so much. So much of a movie these days is world building and enabling fan fiction and enabling the fans to carry the world into their own stories and into their own world, or carrying themselves into the world. And this nails the world. Second great thing. Out of the four main kids in the story, podcast being the exception, three of them are just great characters. Just nailed it as teacher, right? 25 years in the classroom, as I always say. I do feel like I have some sort of experience with kids, and I can look at this and say, yeah, these kids don't make me recoil and say, what are you doing here? That's not how a kid acts. That's not silly. Or that is silly. You don't get that here. What you get here is some fantastic work, right? Finn Wolfhard plays Trevor Spengler, and you just have to feel a little bit for Finn Wolfhard, right? I mean, he's born into this world with this fantastic name, Finn Wolfhard. Finn Wolfhard. And then, Finn is not exactly blessed with the Arnold Schwarzenegger physique or the Carl Weathers physique. Finn is cast continuously as the nerd, right? He's the DM, the Dungeon Master, and Stranger Things. Here he's playing second banana to his proton pack wielding sister Phoebe. And Finn is blessed with some great acting talent, and he pulls it off. He carries it off, and he's got great hair. But the name Finn Wolfhard doesn't really suggest the ectomorphic type of roles that he, ectomorphic type of characters that he is slated into. Nonetheless, he does a fantastic job with him. And Trevor Spengler is a great character. The plight of boys is really personified in Trevor Spengler, without being maudlin, without being pathetic with a B. It's a great character and allows you to see how disaffected, how alienated, how scared, and how in trouble our boys are. And if you don't believe that, go look at the suicide numbers. Way more males than females commit suicide in the United States each year. Way more. Suicide is a male problem, and people don't talk about it. The other character that's great is Trevor's sister, and she gets more screen time and is first banana. And she's neurodivergent, right? The character is neurodivergent, played by McKenna Grace. There are so many great lines in this movie. And she has a great line in there: overstimulation calms me. Everybody's staring at these crazy ghosts zipping around this light display, this 4th of July fireworks episode on the screen here. Everyone's terrified. And they say to Phoebe, aren't you scared? And she says, overstimulation calms me. And she proceeds to act and carry out her duty. Makes you really think about the relationships between bravery and neurodivergence, right? Being able to act even though you might be afraid. Maybe does neurodivergence obviate the need for bravery because you just don't get scared? I don't think so. I don't think so. But the movie at least makes you think about that. It puts out ideas like that. And it nails the neurodivergent character. It does not exploit the neurodivergence. It doesn't even talk about it. It just presents a character who is much more believable as a young scientist than young Sheldon from the Big Bang series, or even old Sheldon Leonard and all those other guys from the Big Bang. Great show, but that's not how a brilliant, genius scientist seems to act in real life. I've been fortunate enough to know a few. I've worked in a couple different national labs, albeit briefly, not for my career, but I did work in a couple different national labs. I have some relatives, or at least a relative who went to college when he was like 12 years old. And yeah, geniuses act much more like Phoebe in this movie. Great character there, Phoebe. And then, of course, Lucky Domingo. Celeste O'Connor plays Lucky Domingo, Trevor's love interest, and she nails this character. The writers nail the small town, committed fourth generation in the middle of nowhere character. She does the things that they do. What do they do for fun after work? They drive up to the ruins of America and they hang out in the ruins. And having grown up in a small town myself, and living in a small town in the middle of the Adirondacks now, yeah, that's what people do. That's what kids do in small towns. They grow up and they hang out in the ruins, the old trestle that's fallen down, the train tracks that are not used anymore, the old farmhouse that's dilapidated and collapsing. These are the party spots. The ruins are the party spots these days. Have been for a while. So wonderful, wonderful 3 out of 4 characters there. Podcast, little too stocky, I guess. That's a pun, stock character. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was good as a character. The stylized character didn't quite fit in with the other characters, but I thought Podcast was a decent character, just not wonderful like the other ones. Next, number 3, that's great. Well, the ghosts are amazing. Vince Clortho and Zool, they are super dogs. They look better here than even in the original Ghostbusters. And then instead of Slimer, you have Muncher in this movie. What a wonderful ghost. Do you know who played him? Josh Gad. That's right, Olaf himself. And then they even call out Olaf when the mini marshmallows are waking up in the Walmart. The mini marshmallow ghosts, one of them does a little Olaf routine with the carrot on his nose and the antics. He's animated just like Olaf is. That's really a nice little subversive moment out of Ghostbusters here. It makes me wonder if at some point in development somebody was trying to stick it to Disney. I don't know. But that was a pretty cool subversive moment right there. The Ghostmobile with the side gunner seat rampaging through the small town, shooting down Chomper or Muncher out of midair. That was an absolutely great scene. And, to be a good Ghostbusters movie, you kind of have to have really good ghosts. And this one did. So kudos to them. Fourth thing, memorable small town in contrast to Manhattan in the first Ghostbusters movie. And the River of Slime in Ghostbusters 2 even absolutely nailed the small town atmosphere. I go to a car hop. It doesn't have roller skates like the one in there. So they pull in there, and the mom, Spengler's daughter, Callie, she says, "I can't believe places like this still exist." They do. They do. I go to a drive-in outdoor A&W right here in the Adirondacks several times every summer. It's a great place. And the other staples of small town life. Everyone knows everyone else. Check. Teacher doing nothing in summer school with kids from all the different districts converging on one spot. Check. Dirt farmer that, even though he hardly ever leaves his farm, is known to everybody. Check. Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing, the fifth thing, the story. The story and the plot and the characters, they all line up for a great arc. What is the theme here? What is the theme? Sometimes people don't even look for themes in popcorn movies like this, and confectionery treats of movies just like this, and social experience blockbuster movies just like this. But I promise you, the story arcs are there. I promise you, if you go to a screenwriters conference, they are talking about character arcs, they're talking about story, they're talking about plot all the time. And they're talking about how to do it. So there absolutely are themes, there absolutely are story arcs that are out there, even in movies like Red Notice. So what is it here in Ghostbusters? This is a movie about redemption. This is a movie about redemption for the grandfather, right? Egon Spengler. It is a movie about redemption for Phoebe, the granddaughter. Her name, of course, Light. And it's a movie about redemption for the mom. It's redemption for podcasts, even. But most of all, it's redemption for the Ghostbusters franchise. You might know that there was a bit of a misstep a few years ago with a certain Ghostbusters movie that shall not be talked about further. And this movie, unlike J.J. Abrams with his outrageously prideful opening line for Episode 7. Remember Episode 7? The first line in Episode 7 is, "This will begin to make things right." And you know that Abrams wasn't talking about anything in the plot as much as he was talking about, oh, Episodes 1, 2, and 3 were so bad, and everybody knows it, and now I'm going to start Episodes 7, 8, and 9 and redeem the Star Wars franchise, save the Star Wars franchise. Yeah, JJ, how did that turn out? You are absolutely held up as a lesson of how not to do things. You're held up as an example of destroying a franchise now. People love 1, 2, and 3 far more than they love 7, 8, and 9. So Ghostbusters here, Afterlife, Ghostbusters Afterlife, wisely chooses not to begin its dialogue with some statement about that horrific Rosie O'Donnell piece from a few years ago. Instead, it just goes on to make a great movie, right? And talk about redemption. Everybody in this movie that has a good heart gets saved. It even talks a little bit about, how real life intersects with artificial life, because you've got this tremendously moving part where Harold Ramis, who played Egon Spengler, he's passed away in real life. But they bring him back in art only to vanish. His character dies right at the start of the movie. And that intersection between real life and the artificial life that you're seeing on screen is just like what Kit Hood did with Degrassi. And that's where it gets its poignance. This is not a movie where Tony Stark has to die at the end. This doesn't require that. In fact, for the redemption to take place here, it's someone coming back from death. It's the opposite of that. It's afterlife. And it's effective. It is absolutely making an effective throwback to the time when the movies didn't have to have people die to lend that feeling of gravity, to lend that feeling of importance, or to give it an emotional impact. You still get an emotional impact at the end of the movie, even though you don't have to have anybody die. And everybody gets saved. So great theme there. Now, is it as great as the original? So those are the five things. Those are five great things, right? The Ghostbusters, the callbacks, the nostalgia, the three great kids, the memorable small town, the absolute super ghosts and the special effects, and the story, the plot, and the character arc of redemption. Great dovetailing between what you're seeing on screen and what you've had in real life. Is it as great as the original? Nah, no. It's missing that libertarian crusade, for one thing, which is always welcome. And you could have seen more of the original characters, and we could have seen more of the fantastic music, although they do play it in subtly at the climax and a couple other pieces. And finally, the climax itself is the weakest part of the movie, right? Such a memorable climax in the original Ghostbusters. And here, the climax is the weakest part of the movie. All the great memorable lines are from earlier in the movie, with the exception of certain callback lines, like you knew that Gozer was going to ask Ray if he was a god, and they handled that pretty well. But still, we've been waiting 30, 40 years for that to happen, and I feel like it maybe could have been a little bit better. But in general, excellent movie, not as good as the original, but still very, very good. I will say the suspense and ignorance piece here, right? Just keep in mind, so if you're just tuning back in here at the 20-minute mark, keep in mind the relationship between suspense and disbelief. I'm not going to give any spoilers from this point on. So if you're coming back at the 20-minute mark to hear about the news, that's great. But I will say about Suspense and Ignorance, if you like to be in ignorance through your movies, hey, you're in good company, right? Remember, a lot of people love suspense, extremely popular. But it's new, right? Aeschylus, Euripides, Aristarchus, Sophocles, the great golden age of Greek theater, they did not rely on suspense. They didn't even conceive of suspense as a narrative tool. And yet people enjoyed and still do enjoy those dramas, those plays, those tragedies and those comedies. Shakespeare, right? Everybody knew how everything ended. Shakespeare just copied his plots. He absolutely just lifted them out and plunked them down. They were stock plots. The genius of Shakespeare is not in a novel, haha, plot or a new narrative. Everybody knew what was going to happen. The genius of Shakespeare, of course, is the poetry and the characters and the psychology and the insights into human nature and the beauty of the language. If it's not clear by poetry, that's partly what I mean by poetry. So suspense really just came, with the novel, as the word suggests, right? The new stuff, the new plots. And people didn't know how things were going to end. And a lot of people like that. And that's great. It can be fun to be in suspense. Remember that's from the great Oscar Wilde, Importance of Being Earnest, right? Oh, the suspense is terrible. I hope it lasts. But it is, I think, important to remember that suspense relies on ignorance. Suspense relies on ignorance, and it is quite possible to enjoy movies, as we all do, seeing them for the second time, seeing them for the third time, seeing them for the fourth time, or books, reading them through multiple times. So, to the young artists out there, I would simply say don't rely entirely on suspense. And suspense is still completely absent from many genres, right? Role-playing games do not rely on suspense as art. If you're playing the role-playing game and you're making art that way, you can incorporate elements of suspense, but the actual game, the rules of the game, and most people, right, that do RPGs, their playing time to reading time is a very low ratio, less than one. So you do need to evaluate RPGs based on the written text and not always on how they're played. And suspense is lacking there. All right, let's get to the news. So some news items here. First of all, you've got Jack Dorsey stepping down from Twitter yesterday. Okay, that's probably a good move for Twitter finally. I think Dorsey was much better entrepreneur and innovator than he was a maintenance CEO. The new guy, of course, is already in trouble though. Did you see? Parag Agrawal is in trouble because he's setting a new world record in Hoisted by Your Own Petard because his own tweets from 11 years ago, or at least one particular tweet, is being used by conservatives against him. Is it fair? I don't know. What he did is he was quoting The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And at first, conservative Twitter, such as it is, struggling by on its limping life, conservative Twitter jumped out all over this old quote. And the quote is, "If they are not going to make a distinction between Muslims and extremists, then why should I distinguish between white people and racists?" That's the new CEO of Twitter, Parag Agrawal. And he was quoting The Daily Show. It's unclear if people knew this at first, but it came out that he was quoting an episode from 2010 of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And the quote again, but he doesn't say that. He does put it in quote marks, Agrawal does, but he doesn't say he's quoting The Daily Show. And it just says, "If they are not going to make a distinction between Muslims and extremists, then why should I distinguish between white people and racists?" So everybody jumped over Agrawal, and then everybody else jumped out and said, "Hey, he was just quoting The Daily Show. It's a joke. Get over it." And people kind of do seem to be getting over it. I'm not sure that the fact that it's a joke dismisses it, though, or the fact that you're quoting it dismisses it. I watched the clip that it comes from, and like a lot of The Daily Show, I just thought it was very poor and in bad taste and really even though it's a joke, it is supporting the idea that there is a link between white people and racism, right? It's basically what the quote is saying and what the skit is saying is that Muslims are to extremists as white people are to racists. It's not saying that Muslims are extremists. That's the opposite of the point, that they're not always extremists. And it doesn't say that white people are racist, but that's not exactly the opposite of the point in that case. So I don't know. That's kind of like saying, oh, I was just quoting this joke about Jewish people. Oh, I was just quoting this joke about, you know, people of color. I was just quoting joke. It's a joke. I was just quoting a joke. I don't know if that excuses you. You know, I don't know if you can get excused because you're just quoting a joke. And then people will say, oh, this joke was, you know, not calling white people racist. I don't know. I don't know. The Daily Show really did kind of support the idea that white people were prone, white people, the Daily Show did support this idea that there was some sort of an association between white people and racism. It really did. So I'm not sure that Agrawal gets off by saying it's just a joke, but it looks like nobody's going to hold him to it. So next thing in the news, the Federal Trade Commission on Monday said that it's going to investigate why there are empty shelves at Walmart, Amazon, and Kroger. Kroger, big grocery store chain throughout the middle part of the country, if you are unaware. So, and it's also going to investigate suppliers like Procter & Gamble and Tyson Foods and Kraft Heinz Company. Wow. So do we really trust the FTC? Who do you think knows more about supply chains, Amazon or the Federal Trade Commission? Come on. This is insane. The idea that they're going to go in and they have the knowledge and the expertise to figure this out and set it right, that's just nuts. That's just dumb, frankly. And people shouldn't support that. There are going to be people out there saying, oh, thank goodness the FTC is getting involved. Please, the FTC should be abolished, right? FTC should be second against the wall after the FDA. FDA delenda est, FTC next. All right. Next, you've got this doctor out of South Africa who is one of the very first to see the Omicron symptoms. And this is Angelique Kotze. She's chairwoman of the South African Medical Association. And she's talking about what she's seeing down there. And she says, I said these different symptoms that I'm seeing, they can't be Delta. They are very similar to Beta, or it must be a new strain. Now, what are these new symptoms? Well, they're not lack of smell. They're not low oxygen levels. They're not elevated pulse rates. In fact, what she's seeing with Omicron are fatigue, head and body aches, and occasional sore throats and coughs. That is a quote from her. And then she goes on to say, I don't think it will blow over, but I think it will be a mild disease, hopefully. For now, we are confident we can handle it. So, some good news coming out of South Africa there. Now, is it going to turn out to be a nothing burger? Well, we'll see. But of course, organizations around the world, governments around the world have taken the chairwoman's statements and summaries and feelings into consideration, and they've repealed all their travel bans, and they've gone back on all the things that they rushed to. Ah, I'm just kidding. Of course they didn't do that. No, all those travel bans are still in place, and all those draconian measures are still in place. Why would they listen to the chairwoman here? Why would they actually think about what they're doing before they run in and do it? Why would they look before they leave? Come on, that's not what this is about. Yeah. All those emergency measures, they're still in place. Government loves a new emergency. Next in the news, Jason Abeluk, who is the guy from Yale who did the Bangladesh mask RCT, he wrote Tyler Cowen and said, no, really, my study is good after all. And yes, it was only 20 cases. out of 400,000 people that masks seem to make a difference for, 20 cases out of 400,000 people, but here's why that's significant, and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, I feel like Jason has done a good job here. I still think that masks probably do have some small effect, but the fact that nobody's been able to unequivocally demonstrate it now, going on 2 years almost, 1.7 or something years into this, demonstrates how small the effect is and that the benefits are certainly not, certainly, I feel like I can say now, certainly not worth the tremendous costs that masks and the attendant atmosphere of fear are imposing on our population, especially the youngest among our population. Last news item here today, if you didn't see this in Pakistan, see what's going on over there in Pakistan. You had a riot with thousands of people. They overwhelmed the police station. They burnt down the station. Why? Well, because they're a lynch mob, and they accuse, hasn't even been proven, some guy of desecrating the Quran. One guy got accused, not even proven, that he desecrated the Quran. And so you had thousands of people who came out. And the guy was, you know, neurodivergent or mentally challenged or emotionally challenged somehow. It's not quite clear yet. And the, you know, the mob of thousands of people wanted to kill him, wanted to lynch him. They were not successful, thank goodness. But if you look at the pictures, you know, it looks like a war zone out there. So that's what was happening in Pakistan yesterday. Blasphemy is still carrying the death penalty over there, but this wasn't even legal. This was just a lynch mob. So I guess you should appreciate law and order where you can find it. And that's going to wrap it up for us today, folks. I hope that you have an absolutely amazing day. Look forward to talking with you tomorrow. We're going to have a Poetry Wednesday. Enjoy. Remember to subscribe. Remember to find me, adkhomeroom.substack.com, and of course on Twitter. Take care.